tell you this, from my brief career in sales, what I learned very quickly was that you need to go, you need to fish where the fish are hungry, okay? You got to, where the people, where there's an appetite for what it is that you have. Okay, so by the law of numbers, we're talking to everybody, but more specifically, you can laser beam focus at certain areas here in Houston, Texas, wherever you're from. There's places like this everywhere. Networking groups with like-minded individuals, and there's real estate meetings every week in Houston, multiple meetings every week. There's also a little place here in Houston, Texas called Intrust. Are you familiar with Intrust?
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, no, I'm about to get in trouble.
Anybody don't know what Intrust is? Okay, good.
Okay,
all right, everybody knows.
Intrust is a third-party IRA administrator. Okay, you have IRA money, you take it out of wherever it's at, take it to Intrust, you can direct it to do anything you want with it. Just so happens they've got 30-something, how much is it, Jim? 30-something million?
48 million.
That's $48 million that's sitting in an account that's not being used. Okay, and I just had a conversation with someone in this room who has money over there that's not being used, and it is totally not in your benefit to have it there unless you're going to use it, because they charge fees on that money. So the only way it makes sense is to use it. So there's $48 million sitting there looking for people like you. Okay, so what Intrust does, by law, they are not SEC, they are not allowed to say, hey, this person has money, why don't you, I want to introduce you to this person so y'all can do deals. They can't do that, but they can throw client mixers where they throw an event where they invite people with money and they invite people who are looking to borrow money. They put them together and that's how deals happen. Now, there's a lot of other companies like that as well, but we just so happen to be in Houston, Texas, which is one of the top Intrust branches in the nation. So we've got a really, really competitive advantage when it comes to raising private money and finding people who want to be partners for deals, because they can partner that IRA money to do your deals. And it's a numbers game. I'm not telling you you're going to go to a client mixer. And they also have small breakout sessions as well at their office. I'm not going to tell you you're going to go there right away and find money, because more than likely, you're not. But if you apply what we do, and you don't get into pitching a deal, you present yourself, establish your credibility, your team, and you stay focused, and critical point, like Jim has done, Jim does it to a T. He is there at all their functions. They begin to recognize his face. They see him. They introduce him. They see it January, February, March. Jim's now at this point raised, I think, millions. It's in the millions, right?
A little over $3 million in the last 10 months.
In the last 10 months.
I have 43 private investors that I work with, and all but three of them were met at Intrust events, including one of my private money lenders who is here today. I met him at an Intrust event.
So who is that so we can go borrow him?
So if you didn't know that information before you came here, hopefully that was worth the price of admission, because it's an absolute gold mine. If you use it properly, it's go where people are hungry. That's where you go.
Let's get a step-by-step real quick, Bruce. Hold on. Joe, what property did we buy in your Intrust retirement account?
Fort Creek.
How much did we buy it for?
$45,000.
Okay. We bought it for around $45,000. It was actually on the market for $50,000. It went off.
$62,000 or so.
Okay, and then we put it under contract for $45,000.
Right.
With cash, using the proof of funds. So his offer looks like Intrust Retirement Services. I became the, what is it, the facilitator or the whatever it is where they write me the check and then I've got to go and pay.
Recap, yeah.
Right. So, you know, it's great. You just need to have to make sure that you have somebody that's a third party to be able to direct that money to for you so that you're not the person going and writing checks for yourself. And it's very seamless. I have to go and present information. This is how much I need. Do a check request. They send a check. Then the person with the account comes and monitors the rehab and everything. And if they don't like what you're doing, then they say, hey, this ain't working. And you will never, you probably, it'll be a long time before you do another deal together. So it's very important to do it correctly. And there's steps, the paperwork and all that stuff at Intrust that they go through. But I have actually done it as an administrator for somebody. And it's a lot more work for me. But it's a lot easier to borrow money when it's private. You can hold it longer.
What's a lot more?
Yeah, for me, it's a lot more work because it's details, like the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, but if you don't want to do it, you just go to the office. They'll like fill out the paperwork right there for you. It's like.
Is there information on the CD?
What's that? Intrust? I mentioned them. Yes, down there. But to me, it's extremely simple. Another case study. A month or so ago, I had a house from a wholesaler come with the deal, put it under contract, called a private lender who had money sitting in Intrust. Your terms are negotiable. It can be whatever you want it to be. You can do just a flat interest rate. You can do it and share the profits. It's really just open to your creativity. Any way you want to do it. If you're doing a flip, you could say, I don't want to make any payments. I'll pay you back interest when it sells. That's how I usually do my flips. So we did the deal, signed the contract. It was one form that they'll fill out at Intrust. And that's it. And they wire the money. And just so you know, with Intrust too, if you have a relationship with your lender, you can get repair money, the purchase price and the repair money up front, which I did. Closed on that, sold, got a contract in the house, we're closing it Monday. They'll get their money wired back to their account, the original loan plus interest. And then you know what happens? When are you going to buy another house? I got more money. They don't want to sit there because it costs them fees. So that's what I'm saying. Just start with one. Take care of them. And it's going to multiply. Yes, sir.
No, I was going to add to that interest. It's quite easy. Quincy will draw all the documents for you.
Sometimes. Depending on the schedule.
You got to pay for him.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, and he wired the money to the title company and draws and all, and everything. I've done it about five or six times to him.
Yeah.
And I have to evaluate the house.
It's a definition of a win-win situation. Yeah. For you and either your partner or your lender, yeah. It's absolutely win-win. As long as you're doing good deals, it's win-win.
Really, really, really important for anybody who goes to these interest things and makes a presentation because they have a round robin. They let everybody make a pitch. Go and talk about yourself and talk about what you've done, or have somebody who's with you that has done something. I've had more lenders than I can name who have, their biggest complaint is everybody is coming out pitching a deal and they're desperate for money. And they don't want people who are desperate for money.
Desperation does not attract.
That is not how you're going to attract money. So make sure you've got your A game on when you go and you make a presentation. You know, you'll get 2-3 minutes. But, you know, I probably have done 30 loans with different interest people.
This is where I'm talking about you know, evaluating your partner.
This is actually where I go.
You know, what are you looking for in a partner? Okay. Brand and I, since we're getting ready to partner, Joe Brothers did a partnership with me. Why I say it's too much work for me is, Joe, if you and I were ever going to do a partnership again, would you let me have checkbook control?
I'm a control guy.
Okay, but would you want me to have checkbook control?
No,
let me just tell you. I still have flips that I was doing. Let me do what I do best, which is find the deals, renovate the deal, rehab the deals. Yeah, you're too close. Find the deals, rehab the deals, sell the deals. Let you take care of everything else that's involved with it. So what strength does your partner have? What do you have? Joe and I butted heads because both of us come from a renovation background. All he needed was my time. But we were similar strengths. Similar strengths do not work well together all the time. If there is leverage on similar strengths, like Brent is running a rehab company, I'm not running a rehab company, I just rehab my own houses. That's a similar strength because he can still go and do what he needs to do and feel confident over here on this side that I know what I'm doing. The next thing is, what do you want from them? Have some clear goals. I just need money. I need your time. I would like your experience. You've got great credit. I have a house that's fully paid for and rented. I would like to pledge that with your credit and cash, and let's go get a portfolio loan. Whatever that is, have some clear, defined goals. What do you want them to be like? I really didn't get that one. What do you want them to be like? I want them to be friendly. I want them to be nice. Who they are as a person.
Have an in picture, basically, of what you want them to be like. If Joe's a control freak, and you know you're not going to get along with someone who's like that, you don't want them to be like that. You want someone who's going to be more open and trusting, hands off, like several of my partners who want little to do with it. Because I've talked to some people who want it to be more hands on. I'm not looking for those kind of partners, just to be honest with you, because I'm too busy. It requires a lot more maintenance than I want to go forward with. So in my mind, a very hands on person who wants to get more involved in day to day operations is not my kind of partner. I would say maybe Curtis has done a lot of mentoring, and I think that's something he likes in doing more and probably enjoys doing more. And my time doesn't allow it because I'm too busy babysitting painters and plumbers and all this kind of stuff that I do a lot. So that's not an ideal fit for me, but it's probably an ideal fit, maybe an ideal fit for him. So have some idea of what you want your partner to look like, is what that means.
Okay. What do you want? You know, what are you supposed to have, and what's important on evaluating them? This is really kind of the beginning of structuring, identifying, and step by step. This is the key part in the partnering. For 3 years we've known each other and we've heard about each other, we've seen each other a lot, we have similar friends, similar interests, but we would never do a deal together until recently. And part of that is because Brent doesn't trust a lot of people. He wants to get to know you, establish a relationship, then maybe after I know you, then I can know if there's a partnership that can begin. So if you do start with, hey, I've got a deal, I want to do one deal, I'm going to structure something nice, and I don't have to go to Wells Fargo and open up this big account and get this huge portfolio loan. Maybe you just want to start with a simple deal, use hard money or private money on one deal, see how the transaction goes, then determine what you're going to do with the profits after that.
That is jumping ahead, but that's important. We're not, a great way to start is not to run out and form an LLC and form a partnership. A great way to start is to do a deal together. You should learn a whole lot. It's like a first date, you know? You learn a whole lot when you start dating, and then a few months later you find out they're psycho. I don't know. Okay? It's a good thing you didn't run off to Vegas with that in the beginning. So start off with just doing a deal or two and then kind of move into partnership, or it's like, I'm going to go the other way. So,
okay, what does a partner have? Do they have the cash, capacity for multiple deals? That's key. Their understanding of risk and rewards. I wouldn't want to take someone that only has $100,000 left to their name and say, hey, let's go use this money and go get a huge line of credit. I'm going to take all that $100,000 and they're going to pledge that. Then they don't have anything else. What do they have to live on? So you really have to understand risk and rewards. Also, if I have a client that only has $10,000 to their name, I would tell them to go get a bird dog or a wholesale deal and quick flip it, make a couple of thousand dollars, and build you up at least $15,000 so that you can manage your repairs for a deal and also pay for your holding costs. So you don't want to partner with somebody whose risk versus reward isn't really there, and you really got to evaluate it on a case-by-case basis. Do they have some business sense about them? You know, I would say no matter what you do with somebody, you always want to doctor it up correctly. You always want to have your legal side. I mean, we're talking about begin with the end in mind. Just a joint venture agreement, something on paper is fine, but I'm sure Bryant back there would tell you that an operating agreement, a management agreement in an LLC that's fully structured, that just in case we bought a property and the person that's financing the project, you know, has a wife and she didn't have to come to title. We've already done all the work on it. We got it to completion. We're trying to sell it, but I didn't cover death, divorce, and dismemberment in my management agreement. Do you know what the three D's of an LLC are? I just said them. Death, divorce, dismemberment. Those are key. You got to be able to cover that. Business savvy people will want to put a formalized contract in place. How accessible are they? Can you reach them?
Staying power, friends, money.
The reason that's important, because I had a situation with a partner who wasn't accessible when I needed them to be. Going through a refinance with hard money lender, and it was very frustrating to me. And so that is something to keep in mind as you're beginning out the relationship. If they're taking a week to reply to email or a phone call, that's not what you're going to want whenever you're going through this process. Because you're essentially, that person is representing you and your business dealings with other people. So it made me look bad. It was actually I had a loan with David at Red Door. So I had to apologize to him on a few times because this individual was not accessible. They weren't following up. So that's just one of the many things which we'll look at.
Okay, does your person have available cash or ready cash? I mean, I'm just looking for, do they have cash?
In cash.
Liquid that I can write a check with, but they can write a check to pay for the supplies. The best thing to do, I'm going to tell you, this is what my partnerships do. This is what Joe and I did, is we went and got a credit card that has a spending limit to it and also is within an LLC. You can get one from Home Depot. You can get one just a regular American Express card. I have an Amex Blue. Those things have points to it. Points also provide for, Brent just went on a vacation on his points. So have that there. Then when you go to Home Depot or that contractor goes wherever they're going, they will put it on the card. They need to take, and then I have what I'm doing right now so that I don't get into trouble with myself or my partners is that now I have this little application on my phone called Cam Scanner. It's a little app, it's free. So then I click on that, I click my receipt, it takes a picture of it, it converts it immediately to a PDF, and then I email it before I've even left the store. And then on the subject line, I put the house address. What have I done? I'm giving immediate transparency to the person on the other side that's providing the capital, and he's able to give me a weekly tracking report of where we're at versus my bid for repairs and my actual projections of where we are. Like, you only have $3,000 left on a $20,000 budget and you started this a week ago. It's not good, you know, but you want to know where you're at daily. So I don't necessarily want a checkbook and then have to go write checks. I would rather have a credit card and then have the one person, whether it's the tax bookkeeper or the partner that would rather control that, I'd rather them finalize the bill at the end of 30 days. Let's see here. Do you have anything else to add on to that?
Nope.
You want to talk about this?
Yeah, I do. This is about evaluating your partner. Whenever you get into this, everybody's interested in doing it. However, you really need to know what their fear factor really is, their threshold, because a lot of people get scared whenever it comes time to actually do it. And so That's why I have a couple of those slides. It's, they have cash that's ready and available, meaning it's liquid, and then they're actually going to do it and sign on the line whenever it comes time. Because a lot of times this is what will happen. You say, hey, I've got a deal. We need the money. Let's go. You went too fast.
I went backwards.
Oh, no, go hit it forward. Okay, so you ask them. Someone hit mute. That's supposed to scream. They take off running. Okay, so it's something to think about. When you put a house under contract, you've got a relationship with somebody. You think when it comes time to the closing table, they're going to fund your deal, and then they bail. Has that ever happened to everybody? No. Well, then.
Yeah. One person in the back will.
Okay, and it comes time to do it. They bail on you. So that's one part. Go to the next slide. You're going to evaluate them, and also on your forms, there's an earnest money form you may consider, I'm not saying you absolutely do, but you consider, if you have a doubt, a little fear that, hey, is this person really going to close? You might want to get some money up front from them with earnest money to make sure that they're not messing around. And that is really how you're going to see if they're serious, because if they won't even give you money then, earnest money, if it's $500 or $1,000 just to show that they're serious, you'll know don't waste your time moving forward. So that's part of the evaluation process, because you don't want to have a deal locked up, ready to go, and then they bail on you. So that's why whenever, it depends on how you do it, but I like to sign the contract to have control. So if a money partner backs out or a partner, I can always pull someone else in, rather than if it's in that person's name and they bail, the contract's in their name. So, yes, David.
I was going to ask, is earnest money good to both of you, or is it good to you personally?
That would go to the end. The question is, where would that earnest money go? I would recommend it goes to the, if it's a partnership, we're going to get into structuring. If it's a partnership and you're setting up an LLC, we go to that entity and just be held there. It can also be set up like as a consulting fee that can be reimbursed to them when they actually do a deal. If the money's not to be used, it's just to be set aside to show that they're serious and do it. And what?
That's you were putting property in the contract.
What's that?
Yeah.
No, I said this is like your vetting of a lender to make sure they're serious.
If you're, sometimes you may be out there trying to find a deal before you find a partner. You find a good deal, well, you're not going to have your LLC already on that contract, right? So this is another good thing, is that you've got the contract, you're partnering together, you've already put your earnest money out, now you're getting another earnest money contract form and they're going to write it personally to you. Then you're going to, because it's a foreclosure, you may not be able to go back and retrade the deal and change the entity, because Fannie Mae guidelines have changed. They will bust the deal and you'll have to wait another 15 days for that thing to be able to finish the bidding process.
This is just basically, you're asking them to put their money where their mouth is. That's what they're serious when it comes down.
And this is a sample of what the earnest money agreement form is.
That's on your CD, one of the forms.
Extra cash. Somebody needs to have the capacity. You don't want to take everything that somebody has.
It's not worth, to me, it's not worth doing a deal if you can't sleep at night. And if someone's on tight finances, tight budget, and you need everything to line up properly, or else you're going to be, what do we do for the cash? Walk away. I would not do that deal, because if it's going to cause stress or bad relationship, you don't want to do it. You don't want to put your lender in a bad position. If it's the fine line where they're going to make it financially on a deal, you just walk away.
Does anyone here have partnership deals? Single family partnerships? One. Okay. And two. Okay. How long does it typically take you to get engaged into the actual buying process into the LLC?
From start to finish?
Yeah, like from when you met somebody to the point in which you actually start buying this.
Depending on the situation, between a week and 6 weeks.
A week and 6 weeks. What about you, Jim?
About the same.
Okay, so this, the capacity capacity to do multiple deals. If it took me 6 weeks to be able to do one deal with somebody ever, and I just had to wait another 6 weeks and then go and find property for 90 days and then finally get it under contract and close in 45 days, my goodness, I mean, that's a long, long headache. So like Brant was saying earlier in this segment, fish where the fish are, the big fish, not just the small ones that are easy to catch in a little net. You know, what is it, low-hanging fruit? There's a reason why you don't want to pick low-hanging fruit.
You're going to get a whale, it ain't going to happen in a week, I promise you.
It's not going to happen in a week, but when you take a six-week partner, they usually have a capacity to do multiple deals, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and then you don't have to do another 6 weeks. And you can just keep doing deals. And that's how you replicate and repeat money. Right. Yes, sir? If I have a partnership already formed, you're going to form one. I would form one. Personally, I would form one and not do a joint venture. I want to do a partnership. This is I may vary from
somebody
else.
Depends if it's a rental or flip also. And that's we're jumping ahead, that's fine. An LLC is a partnership that's set up for long term, okay? That's a long term business. Model relationship you're setting up. A joint venture is one house, one deal. Okay, so if you're looking just say to flip a house, I would recommend, especially if you're starting out, to flip a house, just a joint venture. Do you go joint venture agreement, Jim?
Sorry?
The JV agreement on your flips? Yeah, I would highly recommend just doing a joint venture agreement on a flip.
Now, sometimes if I'm partnering versus borrowing the money,
Right.
If I'm partnering, I'll do a joint venture or whatever structure my money man feels comfortable with.
That's a great point.
If I want an LLC, I'll give them an LLC. But in most instances, they're very comfortable with the JV agreement.
Yeah. And if your question is if you use, I don't know if that's your question, but if you put your name on the joint venture or an LLC, you talk to your accountant and attorney about that. It's like a single member LLC, you might use that. It's really an accountant type of question.
If I'm, inside of my LLC, I have C-Bond Properties, okay? C-Bond Properties. C-Bond Holdings governs C-Bond Properties. And then inside of C-Bond Properties, we have our flips, and we have our rentals. Because the tax man is going to, if I do more than one flip in a year in an LLC, guess what happens to all my passive income? See ya, it's gone. If you're gonna form an LLC and you're gonna flip, it provides the most tax sheltering. You'd never wanna flip. A JV agreement may have your LLC and their LLC. Yep. And that, I would say, great. As long as your LLC is an LLC for flipping. Because that K-1 is gonna come out and you're going to be taxed that earned income on that, or whatever it is, short-term capital gains. On the flip side, we bought those five properties from the subdivision bankruptcy. We bought five properties in a separate LLC, and then we sold all five of them within a year. If I would have done that, I would have offset all 14 properties that are just sitting in a rental portfolio. I would have lost all of the tax advantages. So we have separate entities that do separate things, laser focus.
But did you say all under one name or?
I'm saying that we have a holding LLC. Okay? And that's the name that we write most of our checks through. Okay? But then inside of where we buy a property, we may buy a property over here. We may buy it under a different entity name, but it's all the money is going to be going back to the holding company. And then we divvy profits from that.
Dive into that.
Do what now?
I believe that you put the diagram. I'm trying to follow exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
For me, Curtis is a little bit different than mine. This is mine. It's a little simpler. I have an LLC that I hold all my rental properties in that LLC. Okay? If I buy, hold, it's done in the name of my rental LLC. This is me and my wife own this. I also, after I flipped a house in my LLC, my accountant said, what in the world are you doing, you idiot? He said, you need another LLC to flip houses in. So I have another LLC that I, whenever I contract a house to flip, I use this LLC to do that. I also have multiple partnership LLCs. Okay? And on this LLC is the name, my personal name and or the personal or business name. I have one partner who uses his holdings is a name on here. My name and the partner's name is on that LLC. This is totally separate from this, and this is totally separate from that. Does that make sense? So let's say, what is it? Oh, Hani. Oh, let's say Hani goes out and buys 10 rental properties this year. He's going to set up an LLC. He's going to buy them all on this. And then next year, he wants to get into the flipping game. He's going to call his attorney or accountant first. He's going to instruct him to set up a separate LLC. After that, he's going to follow what I've done. After that, he's going to say, I'm going to look for some partners. He's going to go to that partner. He's going to meet with EBAT. They're going to form a partnership that's going to be a separate LLC. Let's say he finds another partner and they decide they want a partner. He'll form another LLC. Does that make sense?
And each one of them will have different tax structures and different tax liabilities. Because you may have a new partnership LLC that they want to hold rentals. And then that same person says, you know what, I want to flip. So then you got to go form another one and do it just for flipping. And then each one will have its
own. And they want a joint venture. They don't know if their personalities are going to work out too well. So they want a joint venture. It's essentially a one or two page document. And I've got a couple of examples on your form CD. But just have an attorney review it. That's why I was having an attorney review one yesterday. I like to get other input as well from different attorneys. So this is a JV agreement. It's kind of a partnership, but it's not a formal entity. It's a joint venture agreement. One house, one deal, one partner. Does that make sense? These are long term. These are going to the courthouse, getting married. This is a one-time thing, okay?
That's going to the courthouse getting married.
What's that?
Doesn't that income from the joint venture fall into a separate Schedule E?
That's a tax question.
It depends on whose name you put on. Your personal name is going to an LLC. It just depends.
Okay. All right. Now, because Michael Plax does my taxes. And when I started to get into flipping, you know, we talked about should I structure a C corp, an S corp, or an LLC. And everybody says hold rental in an LLC or in your personal name, and it depends. And his evaluation on the corporate structure was if you pay yourself a salary every month that would be whatever you would cost you to hire somebody competent to do the same job you're doing, and you pay yourself regularly, then you want to be in a C corp because it's cost effective,
yeah.
And you'll get the tax benefits. But he said, do 8 or 10 flips in an LLC, in a separate LLC. If you decide you want to stay in that, then create, but then you got to start having enough of a nest egg to pay yourself a salary and the taxes and the self-employment on it in order to move forward.
And usually, for me, when we get into S corp, C corps, I just stop talking, and I call your attorney, CPA, and let them handle that stuff.
I have no
idea.
And this
is not your class for that discussion.
Like I know that.
I know
that.
Get into
school,
law school.
I can write out
that in the discussion.
That's all I know.
Do you pay yourself? The what you mentioned about paying yourself from that? Are you doing that? You paying yourself?
Yes, my tax person pays myself.
Okay,
that's how he set it up.
This is as deep as we want. want to go into LLCs, but I want to make sure everybody understands just this. And to be honest, this my knowledge doesn't go much further than this, and I'm getting along fine, as well as Curtis, but I want to make sure at least you understand this, right?
I would just like some clarification again on, currently there's a different tax structure for rentals and it's opposed to flipping.
Yes, yes, long-term versus short-term capital gain.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so if you have a bunch of rental properties and you flip in that same entity, it can destroy all your tax advantage of having those properties. Then you get into what was actually your intent of that.
Just go and seek competent tax
and guidance.
Exactly.
Because it changes every year.
Yes, it does. It changes. It changes every day.
Dramatically.
All right. Risk and reward. You know, a disclosure statement is great. Having a disclosure statement. You know this.
Yes, there's one on your forms. Read it. Let them know about the risks. If you're bringing someone into this real estate ride, let them know the risks up front. Like I said, there's a form on there. So there's definite risks. And let them know what you do to avoid those risks. Of course, be up front. Let them know that there's risk involved with any type of investing as well as real estate.
Even when I put contracts on property, and I'm going to buy it for myself or for, you know, my LLC, I still have to put in there, under the special provisions I put in, owner or buyer is a licensed broker in the state of Texas, okay? Then, if it's a short sell that I'm putting, I've done a listing agreement on there, in the listing agreement, I always put, you know, seller is aware that they are behind on their mortgage, facing foreclosure, and a short sale agreement may not be the end result. If it's not, we have done everything within our power to try to stop it, but we cannot guarantee that foreclosure will not happen. I put that out there, and that way they can sign it. But disclosure statements are so good. You know, that's the reason why contracts are so long and we pay so much money for them. Because they protect you.
And let me give you a case. Under promise and over deliver. The deal we're closing on Monday, it's my first time working with this individual. And we got to talk about the deal. And she's like, well, how long do you think it's going to take? I'm like, well, comp say 2 to 3 months. She's like, oh, so I'll probably get my money back in 3 months. I said, no. What I'm going to tell you is you may get it back in 3 months. I'm like, are you okay with the market tanks, all hell breaks loose in Houston, Texas, and we got to leave it out there for a year or 2 years? Are you okay with that? Yeah, that's fine. Okay, good. You might be getting it back in 3 months, but you might not. So I'll let them know that there's obviously risk. I'm like, are you okay if whatever the market does tank and we have to convert this to a rental? Or what if you want to go owner financing? So I'll let her know there's other options. Ideally, she'll be getting her money back in 3 or 4 months, and you hope all goes well, but sometimes it doesn't. But I'll say, we've got plan B and plan C, where you can still make money, and so that's what we'll do. But always, under promise and over deliver is key.
Yeah, and someone with business sense is going to look at a deal, and they're going to evaluate it. They should. They should evaluate a deal based on, okay, right now, every month, out of my paycheck, if they're working for corporate America and they've got a what I would call it a income devaluation program, like a 401k, that takes money out of your pocket, you never get it, and pretty much you're going to lose almost every penny you got once you retire. And then, like Steve Davis says, you have to pray that you die before you run out of money. That's awesome. So congratulations on that. So what I believe is very pertinent and key is someone with business sense is going to look at it and say, okay, I'm already putting up 3% of my monthly income is going out into building up a retirement savings program for me. So I wanted to get $20,000 as an expectation on this flip. I'm shooting for $300 in cash flow. I want to have a minimum of $2,500 cash invested into this property after refinancing, whatever those numbers are. Well, setting up good expectations for someone with business sense, they are not going to care if $2,500 turned into $3,500 when they're spending $400 a month, which is $4,800 that's gone out after on 12 months funding a retirement program. They've only given $3,500 maybe after refi, and then their property is cash flowing $300 a month, which is really, what is that, $3,600? So really at the end of the year, they've already paid that investment. So I've seen a lot of people that I know that they've got good business sense, but it really doesn't show up whenever we're talking about this because they get so upset. Well, you told me I was going to have zero out of pocket. So you're mad that you're getting $400 a month, but the way that the market changed, I guess, between when we bought it, when your lazy contractor, because you didn't use Brandt to go in and finish the deal, it took you 7 weeks to rehab something, so then all those comps drop off. Then it takes 60 days that you've got it listed on the market, and then FHA on a refi, FHA or conventional refinance wants to see that property is 60 days off the market. So now I've lost all 6 months worth of evaluation of those comps. And they're going to come back and say, I had to pay $1,500 out of closing. That's not really a bad deal.
No, but you just have to, it's not a bad deal. You just have to set up the expectation of that possibility. So if you say, no, it's no cash out of pocket, I wouldn't say that. We're expecting this. But if this and this happens, it could lead to that.
Right. It all depends. Everything depends. Markets changing, comps change, the way appraisers appraise today, it could be we're still allowing 6 months. No, we're only going to allow the last 90 days. When you're refinancing or you're going through a small private bank, when you're going through FHA or conventional, remember that the appraisers really work for the bank. So you have all the comps that say $95,000 is the ARV. I can guarantee you Bank of America or Chase is not going to go and send out their appraiser and they're not going to give you $95,000. They're definitely not going to give you more. Because right now appraisals on non-homesteaded properties come back typically 5% lower than what you can prove. And then you call up the appraiser and you try to fight with them and says, I'm sorry, I don't work for you. The bank sent me out. It's crazy what they're doing. So just know that you got to set up great expectations. And that goes back to the accessibility and the staying power.
I like friends with money, and because they brag. They brag, take care of them, it's going to come back around.
And set up a good comfort level with somebody. Because real estate investments do work and everybody wants to get in it, but it's not for everyone. So, it's not the easiest thing to get out of, and people who go through a divorce or a short sell or they're trying to sell their house in a down market and they need that money, you know, they know that it's not typically liquid. If it was so easy to get money out of your property, then there would be no need for wholesalers. Wholesalers are the people that go and do a lot of the dirty work. Because the good houses go up on MLS, right? It's the house that's got like ash still left on the studs that they were talking about with Robert Hammond's home. I've seen so many of those. Or I walk in a house and it's just, I'm walking over piles of trash. Will knows, we went dumpster diving in a house that came off the show Hoarders. And I left with like 10,000 baseball cards and some G.I. Joe figures. So, honesty is probably the most important thing. You know, be honest.
Not only for you, but your the partner. Don't move forward with someone if you don't trust them totally either. It's a two-way street.
Yeah. Enough said about that. Brant put this together. I love this form. It's the investor application form. Because you are not just being interviewed so that you can go and use your time or your money. You need to be interviewing as well. And this is going to help you formulate the discussion a lot better. So if you're just talking with someone over the phone, or you see some things online, and you can jot some stuff down, and then once you have your call, use this line of questioning to get the information you want. Your time is valuable. I have a saying, people will pay 50% of equity when they don't have enough time. Because you can steal $10,000 for somebody and you can make it back. But when you've lost a year's worth of your time, how much money does it take to buy a year back of your life? You can't. So how much is time worth? A lot. It's worth a lot to those that have little of it.
And another thing with this investment application, if you're nervous about the conversation, meeting with that person, you can really boil it down to just say, hey, what I'd like to do first is I'm going to send you a form. It's a one-page application. If you could just fill that out and turn it back to me. What it's going to do, one, it's going to give you a lot of great information. Okay? It's like I have an online application set up for tenants, and they also go look at the house first and like, no, my process, send me an application first. I can get a good picture, whether I just don't need to even go any further. This person looks pretty good. It's an application that asks some general questions. One, it gives you all that information to say, hey, this might be a fit. Two, it totally changes the perception of you. You're not asking them to borrow money. You are asking them to apply to partner with you. You see how just the whole stigma of you asking for money? You're not asking for money.
You want the playing field to be equal. Especially when you're the person looking for the money. You need the playing field to be equal. So you're wanting to make sure that you have something that puts that back on an equal playing field.
I made a joke earlier. A lot of these forms are, you know, we don't use them. This is a good one. Okay? The investment application is a good one to use with prospective lenders.
And the rental application, the online rental application, that he even put that online. I want to tell you, I didn't even think about that, but then after he said it, all of a sudden I had like 30,000 ideas that just came to my mind. But the one thing that's, not really 30,000, I had like three. Okay, but the one thing that I thought of, really quickly was, if a business savvy person saw that Brand had an online application for a tenant who's really like a marriage partner, you're in that deal with them legally online, and they are stuck in that property as long as they keep making on-time payments. Someone that I'm going to be looking for money from, I want to know how that person does business. How are they selecting clients that go look at the property? What type of criteria is that? So if Brant put that down, I'm stealing that idea today. And I suggest that y'all do too. On your action pad, it should be, I need to get a website and put down an online application so that I can show an investor, here's what I send out, or here's where people go to register to become a part of my rental portfolio. I thought that was great.
It's just a bunch of little things that are going to paint the picture. There's so many little things. And so that's just one other little added thing that shows that you have systems in place, that you know you are a professional, and you've kind of thought out things. So when they have questions, which really just turns into fear. They want to make sure that their money's getting taken care of. And you're going to, in a little bit, we're going to get down to the bottom line. Can you go move the slide? Because we're going to get into is how are they going to evaluate you. We're about to get into that right now. And they're going to evaluate you much like a venture capitalist evaluates investing with the company. They're going to be looking at, one, the business model, and two, the entrepreneur who's putting it together. Are they going to get it done? Can I trust them? And is this where I want to put my money? And all those little things showing that you have a system set up. The application starts the whole process. Wow, this person, I've never had an application before to apply, you know, to partner with somebody. That's just one of those little things. It's a flag. Man, this guy's polished. He's giving me an application to partner with. That's going to be, and we talk about the client mixers and things like that. Other guys aren't doing that. That's going to put you,
I'm right here on key questions.
Keep going.
Okay.
I think we've covered
we covered the key questions.
absolutely, yes, it's important. It's key information. Just like they might ask to see information from you. Total transparency, even if the truth hurts on something, we've all got history and baggage. Get it out now. If you don't now and it comes out later, it's going to be worse. So whenever, if you're evaluating a partner, yes, you can ask to see their financials. You want to make sure when it comes to closing time, they're going to be able to follow through like they've given you their commitment to do. Another thing, you need to find out, some of these forms are real valuable because say they have $100,000 or $200,000, but they've got an ill parent across the country they didn't tell you about, that they, in the back of mind, I might have to be taking this money. You need to know that up front. That might not be a good situation.
Right.
Okay.
Did anybody watch the show Shark Tank this week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Last night.
Okay. So last night I'm watching it on the DVR, and what I thought was just so amazing about the show Shark Tank was the girl that was up there selling the toys.
Yeah.
And do you remember the line of questionings that the Kevin O'Leary was asking? He said, "So tell me some more." He's getting ready to start making this incredible offer.
Do y'all know what that show is? Shark Tank.
Have y'all seen it?
Yeah.
Shark Tank.
It's like four entrepreneurs, four business people.
It's another Mark Burnett show.
Yeah, it's like a reality show for entrepreneurs.
It's on
ABC.
And an entrepreneur comes up and they have a business idea, and these businessmen will basically throw them a line of questioning to figure out, and they'll either decide they will partner with them and invest with them right there or not. And if people come up and they're not polished, they don't have their plan. They do with the pogos.
I'm out.
The other guy with the, who was the last one?
The nose things.
Huh?
The nose things.
I missed that one. I had five kids.
That was incredible.
We had the volume cranked up all night. There was a guy, but they asked him what the projected numbers were, and he's like, he didn't know. I'm done. They're like, I'm done.
He turned down $4 million for his company last night.
What's that?
Yeah.
He turned down $4 million. He admitted he had $1 million invested in it, in his money and his family's money. They wanted to buy him out completely for $4 million and give him a 10 or 15% residual for the life of the company. And he said no. Would he take $1 million for 30%?
Was that last night?
Yeah, he took $800,000 for 30%.
Plus the people with the 800,000 got
a 10% override on every unit that was sold forever. But this one lady that came in, the line of questioning was so great because you can find out that someone owns, or they say, yes, I've got 100% ownership in this piece of property. Okay. Well, then you go like Wilden on Archer. 602 and 604 Archer. We're thinking that these people own the property outright. All of a sudden, the line of questioning comes in, and guess what? They had a mom, and the mom was also on the title. And so then that just starts clouding everything. It's like, how do we get this? The mom's deceased. Then you've got to go get heirship affidavits, blah, blah, blah. And that's right before we start putting earnest money down. That could blow the whole deal, right? Well, fortunately, the title report comes back and everything's clean. They did transfer it in time and she was removed off. So we can proceed. This lady, she sold off her 50% to other people to raise funding, and her husband owns 50%. She owns 10% and then sold off pieces of 10% to other people. Fortunately, she did get some money out of the deal, which was great. But it just goes to show you that you can have a great idea. You can have all the enthusiasm, but if you don't have the business sense to either, one, ask some great questions, find out all the key pertinent information, then find someone that does. And this is why this application is so important.
And that Shark Tank is a great, great example of how they'll be looking at you. That's a great example.
And it's good to watch because you get to see live negotiating going on. Do not be afraid to ask for what you want. We saw somebody who had a great idea, and they turned him down because he came in and asked for $40,000 for 10% of the company. And he's Mark Cuban was excited about it. He said, "But my problem with you is you should have asked me for $170,000, and I would have said yes. But because you didn't know to ask me for $170,000, I'm saying no."
It was because how you were going to pay for your
the dirty work. Because the good houses go up on MLS, right? It's the house that's got like ash still left on the studs that they were talking about with Robert Hammond's home. I've seen so many of those. Or I walk in a house and it's just, I'm walking over piles of trash. Will knows, we went dumpster diving in a house that came off the show Hoarders. And I left with like 10,000 baseball cards and some G.I. Joe figures. So honesty is probably the most important thing. You know, be honest.
Not only for you, but your the partner. Don't move forward with someone if you don't trust them totally either. It's a two-way street.
Yeah. Enough said about that. Brant put this together. I love this form. It's the investor application form. Because you are not just being interviewed so that you can go and use your time or your money. You need to be interviewing as well. And this is going to help you formulate the discussion a lot better. So if you're just talking with someone over the phone or you see some things online, and you can jot some stuff down. And then once you have your call, use this line of questioning to get the information you want. Your time is valuable. I have a saying, people will pay 50% of equity when they don't have enough time. Because you can steal $10,000 for somebody and you can make it back. But when you've lost a year's worth of your time, how much money does it take to buy a year back of your life? You can't. So how much is time worth? A lot. It's worth a lot to those that have little of it.
And another thing with this investment application, if you're nervous about the conversation, meeting with that person, you can really boil it down to just say, hey, what I'd like to do first is I'm going to send you a form. It's a one-page application. If you could just fill that out and turn it back to me. What it's going to do, one, it's going to give you a lot of great information. Okay? It's like, I have an online application set up for tenants, and they also go look at the house first and like, no, I'll process. Send me an application first. I can get a good picture, whether I just don't need to even go any further. This person looks pretty good. It's an application that asks some general questions. One, it gives you all that information to say, hey, this might be a fit. Two, it totally changes the perception of you. You're not asking them to borrow money. You are asking them to apply to partner with you. You see how just the whole stigma of you asking them for money? You're not asking them for money.
You want the playing field to be equal. Especially when you're the person looking for the money. You need the playing field to be equal. So you're wanting to make sure that you have something that puts that back on an equal playing field.
I made a joke earlier that a lot of these forms are, you know, we don't use them. This is a good one. Okay? Investment application is a good one to use with prospective lenders.
And the rental application, the online rental application, that he even put that online. I want to tell you, I didn't even think about that, but then after he said it, all of a sudden I had like 30,000 ideas that just came to my mind. But the one thing that's, not really 30,000, I had like three. Okay, but the one thing that I thought of really quickly was, if a business savvy person saw that Brand had an online application for a tenant who's really like a marriage partner, you're in that deal with them legally online and they are stuck in that property as long as they keep making on-time payments. Someone that I'm going to be looking for money from, I want to know how that person does business. How are they selecting clients that go look at the property? What type of criteria is that? So if Brant put that down, I'm stealing that idea today. And I suggest that y'all do too. On your action pad, it should be, I need to get a website and put down an online application so that I can show an investor, here's what I send out, or here's where people go to register to become a part of my rental portfolio. I thought that was great.
It's just a bunch of little things that are going to paint the picture. There's so many little things. systems in place that you know you are professional and you've kind of thought out things. So when they have questions, and which really just turns into to fear, they want to make sure that their money's getting taken care of. And you're going to, in a little bit, we're going to get down to the bottom line. Can you go move the because we're going to get into is how are they going to evaluate you? We're about to get into that right now. And they're gonna evaluate you much like a venture capitalist evaluates investing with the company. They're gonna be looking at one, the business model, and two, the entrepreneur who's putting it together. Are they gonna get it done? Can I trust them? And is this where I want to put my money? And all those little things showing that you have a system set up. The application starts the whole process. Wow, this person, I've never had an application before to apply, you know, to partner with somebody. That's just one of those little things. It's a flag. Man, this guy's polished. He's giving me an application to partner with. That's going to be, and when we talk about the client mixers and things like that, other guys aren't doing that. That's going to put you,
I'm right here on key questions.
Keep going.
Okay.
I think we've covered
yeah, we covered the key questions.
Can you ask to see their financial statement? Absolutely. Yes, it's important. It's key information. Just like they might ask to see information from you. Total transparency. Even if the truth hurts on something, we've all got history and baggage. Get it out now. If you don't now and it comes out later, it's going to be worse. So whenever, if you're evaluating a partner, yes, you can ask to see their financials. You want to make sure when it comes to closing time, they're going to be able to follow through like they've given you their commitment to do. Another thing, you need to find out that some of these forms are real valuable because say they have $100,000 or $200,000, but they've got an ill parent across the country they didn't tell you about, that they in the back of mind, I might have to be taking this money. You need to know that up front. That might not be a good situation.
Right.
Okay.
Did anybody watch the show Shark Tank this week?
Yeah.
Yes.
Last night.
Okay. So last night I'm watching it on the DVR, and what I thought was just so amazing about the show Shark Tank was the girl that was up there selling the toy group. And do you remember the line of questionings that Kevin O'Leary was asking? He said, "So tell me some more." He's getting ready to start making this.
Do y'all know what that show is? Shark Tank.
Have y'all seen it?
Yeah.
Shark Tank.
It's like four entrepreneurs, four business people. Five now. Not Cuban.
It's another Mark Burnett show.
Yeah, it's like a reality show for entrepreneurs.
It's on
CBS.
And an entrepreneur comes up and they have a business idea, and these businessmen will basically throw them a line of questioning to figure out, and they'll either decide they will partner with them and invest right there or not. And if people come up and they're not polished, they don't have their plane, they do with the pogos.
I'm out.
The other guy with the, who was the last one?
The nose things.
I missed that one. I had five kids.
That was incredible.
We had the volume cranked up all night. There was a guy, but they asked him what the projected numbers were, and he's like, he didn't know. I'm done. They're like, I'm done. I don't want money. Because he had thought it.
$4 million for his company last night.
What's that?
Yeah.
He turned down $4 million. He admitted he had $1 million invested in it, in his money and his family's money. They wanted to buy him out completely for $4 million and give him a 10 or 15% residual for the life of the company. And he said no. What did he take, $1 million for 30%?
Was that last night?
Yeah, he took $800,000 for 30%.
Plus the people with the $800,000
got a 10% override on every unit that was sold forever. But this one lady that came in, the line of questioning was so great because you can find out that someone owns, or they say, yes, I've got 100% ownership in this piece of property. Okay, well then you go, like Wilden on Archer, 602 and 604 Archer. We're thinking that these people own the property outright. All of a sudden, the line of questioning comes in, and guess what? They had a mom, and the mom was also on the title. And so then that also, that just starts clouding everything. It's like, how do we get this? The, the mom's deceased, then you've got to go get heirship affidavits, blah, blah, blah. And that's right before we start putting earnest money down. That could blow the whole deal, right? Well, fortunately, the title report comes back and everything's clean. They did transfer it in time and she was removed off. So we can proceed. But in the TV show, this lady, she sold off her 50% to other people to raise funding, and her husband owns 50%. She owns 10% and then sold off pieces of 10% to other people. Fortunately, she did get some money out of the deal, which was great. But it just goes to show you that you can have a great idea. You can have all the enthusiasm, but if you don't have the business sense to either, one, ask some great questions, find out all the key pertinent information, then find someone that does. And this is why this application is so important.
And that Shark Tank is a great, great example of how they'll be looking at you. That's a great example.
And it's good to watch because you get to see live negotiating going on. Do not be afraid to ask for what you want. We saw somebody who had a great idea, and they turned him down because he came in and asked for $40,000 for 10% of the company. And Mark Cuban was excited about it. He said, "But my problem with you is you should have asked me for $170,000, and I would have said yes. But because you didn't know to ask me for $170,000, I'm saying no."
It was because you didn't know how you were going to pay for your production.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Because he had initially asked for $40,000, and Mark Cuban said, "Well, what? That's $40,000 is going to be enough for you to create your initial product. What about manufacturing, distribution?" He's like, "Well, that's going to be like probably $140,000 more." He's like, "Why didn't you ask for that up front?" It was basically kind of like, "Well, I would have just figured that out when it comes there." Where's your business plan? Where's your business model? Why wasn't that? He's like, "I would have said yes, but it showed." Basically said, "That shows me you hadn't really thought this through, so I can't partner with you."
Right.
That's a great example.
Absolutely. So, you know, like one of the questions that we get all the time from the banks is, "How many properties are you looking to buy? How many properties am I looking to buy? I'm looking to buy, 15. Okay, well, how much money do you have to fund that? I think we got like, they don't want to hear that. They want to see a nice, succinct plan on paper. If a bank wants to see that and they're going to lend you money, then also a financial person is going to want to see that. Well,
and they might not. Okay, so that's a lot of
money.
But you need to be prepared like they will.
So,
and if they never ask, like mine, I don't got his response was, I don't have time to go look at houses. Tell my assistant to wire the money." That was his responses, okay? I was still prepared. I actually wanted him to come see and look at deals. He didn't have time. That's fine. I'm still doing my due diligence. I've got that information ready in case he ever was one.
So there's a form in here, the risk quiz. You know, you can have them fill out.
The risk quiz is great. It basically is going to help you grade their threshold. We talked about how important that is, because when you know what hits the fan, people deal with it differently. You know, people deal with stuff differently, okay? Some people can remain calm, cool, and collective, see things clearly. Some people can't, okay? And so the risk quiz is basically going to go through that process, that vetting process, to see if it's the right fit. Because I don't want someone who's going to come unglued just because we go a few $1,000 over a budget, where a house doesn't sell as quickly as we thought, or the market tanks and we have to convert from flipping to a rental. I want those things to be okay. And I want them to know I'm doing everything in my power to make this deal profitable, one for them and two for me. But I want to know when problems arise that we're going to be able to work it out. So the risk quiz is another form. It's good.
You want everyone wants their money to grow faster.
But
just by saying, "Hey, I heard you have some money. Would you like to make better returns than you are in the stock market?" Everybody does. But be original. And, you know, I was talking with someone else that's out of the industry, and he was telling me about how difficult it is to get a face-to-face contact with CEO-level clients. And I think that each person that you're borrowing money from is the CEO of their own entity, you know. So a way to stand out and be original is take a video of yourself. hey, my name is so-and-so, and then email it over to that person, or post it and send, or, you know, share it on Facebook and personally send it as a message over. Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I met you at the Flipping Houston Live event. I would like to see if you would be interested in spending 15 minutes talking with me, maybe at a Starbucks. Just be original. Sell yourself. If you can do something out of the box and unique, it's really going to set you apart from everybody else.
And I can say for Jim, and I was so impressed, and, you know, after I met him at Interest,
yes.
I followed up, and he said that. And he had portfolio and pictures. Very impressive. You know, he's a person in my mind. I don't know anything about real estate, but I never lost, you know, him in my mind.
That's why he wears floral arrangement shirts.
Hey,
and I didn't have to pay her to say that either.
Hey, do you mind giving your presentation?
Sure.
Okay.
Right now?
So, yeah, right now. I'll put you on the spot. And he usually has a nice suit and tie. Interesting.
Yeah.
This is polished. Take notes and learn from the best. This is someone who's out doing multiple deals right now. Partners. Private money. Take notes. All right. Action.
And I wear a suit and tie mainly for two reasons. Number one is to stand out because nobody else does. Now some people are doing it. And number two is to add an air of professionalism. And here's my pitch. Hi, my name's Jim Kennedy. And first of all, before I get into my presentation, I'd like to thank Brandt and Curtis for allowing us the opportunity to come here and learn this great information today. Now, again, my name is Jim Kennedy, and what I do is very simple. I buy distressed houses in good neighborhoods, fix them up, make them the best house in that neighborhood, and sell them using private capital to do so. Now, I currently have three excellent investment opportunities for IRA holders or people with money in CDs or whatever to put their money to work safely and securely, earning above average returns over the next 6 months. Now you can put your money to work for longer periods if you want to, so you don't have to keep reworking it every 6 months. It's totally up to you. It's whatever fits your personal investment objectives best. Now all of my deals are validated by independent third-party appraisals, so you'll know going into the deal the value, the after-repaired value of the property. You'll know what we're going to be able to sell it for. All of my deals are validated by independent third-party rehab estimates, so you'll know what it's going to cost to fix it up. And then my deals are secured by local real estate, so you can go kick the bricks if you want to, with significant spreads to provide safety and protection for you, the IRA holder, or the private money partner. I've got flyers here that list some of the benefits of doing business with me and my company. And I'll be around after the presentation to speak with anybody who's interested in talking to me about my private money lending program. Again, my name's Jim Kennedy. Thank you for your time and attention. That's it.
It's that simple.